If you start with the hot water heater, you can wrap it. You can, if you're still in the process of building your house, you can have it closer to the, you can plan it so that the lines aren't so long. You can turn it down a little bit. You can put a timer on it. When you leave the house for 2 days, it will, on a quick recovery, when you come back within a half an hour, you'll have hot water. It's if you do not heat by electricity, it's about a third of your electric bill, so that it is a significant factor. The size of it, it may be too big for your needs. She has 20 things that have to do with your hot water heater, and then she does that with lots of other things about our daily life. And my understanding when the planning committee was meeting was we would do some things we've already done, or we would ask others, is this feasible? Dwayne does not think the timer on your hot water heater is a very good idea. And that sometimes a discussion is to shoot down something that you've heard is a groovy thing, and it really isn't.
That, what is this?
I don't know, you'll be down in
the room.
You were the ones that read pretty thoroughly the How to Live Better on Less, right?
Jurgensen?
I think I got it on your recommendation.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Said you had given it as gifts to people.
Yeah, that's right.
So, what area interests you, or have you tried, or have you heard about? Just take any of those that you want, or any other one.
So, what do you wrap a lot from? We were laughing about Goose Down today.
Doug says that you now can buy an insulated cover very inexpensively for your hot water heater. Sure. Let him describe it when he comes down. Make a note.
Sears and JCPenney sell them. A lot of people do. It's just a blanket.
Just a blanket, but
fiberglass.
It is an insulated fiberglass blanket.
Yeah,
about what do they cost? You have any idea?
Less than $20.
Okay.
And Sunset Magazine has had some good articles on hot water heating by solar. Of next to your house, you have a little wooden frame box with the lid that comes up, and you have an unlined water heater that you lay on its side and paint it black, and it absorbs the heat during the day, and at night you just put the lid down on it, and it's a very simple way to heat your water.
You have that outside?
Yeah, it's outside the house. Now this was in, you know, more of a southern country.
That's probably good, even with that,
Well, you have to ask the company. Not covered with insulation. You know what I mean? Just the bare water heater.
Well, if you just find a tank, any kind of water tank. The plumbing business, that raises an issue, Dan. I'm sure somewhere in Albuquerque that somebody is teaching some kind of free university, and I'm not specially handy, but it took 3 hours, no more than that, until I can do basic plumbing with sweating joints. The mystery of both electricity and plumbing is not that great.
Say plumbing, but don't say that.
Of wiring your house. Now, when I...
The odds are a little worse for a wiring one, blow it.
Yeah. Like you blow up one side of your house.
Yeah, well...
Fire. No, I think John's right.
You will know enough also to know what you cannot do. But the basic wiring of your house, I think you can do lots more than we do. And on plumbing... On a box that required only the fittings and the copper tube and the sweating of joints, I don't think it's that complicated.
Yeah, I've never done any plumbing before coming up here, and I can teach you any of that.
Yeah, why don't you do it while you're at Holden? Then you don't have to wait till you get to Albuquerque.
He can help with the plumbing.
Sure, Dan. We've been looking for a job.
Yeah, Dan.
Teach him the hydro first.
Yes.
Another thing you can do, of course, is just set the water temperature lower in your hot water heater so you aren't having water so hot. Most of them are set at 140 degrees, I think, for especially for dishwashers. And if they're set lower than that, the dishwashers don't get the dishes as clean. So what we did was simply stop using our dishwasher and set our hot water heater down to 120, which takes less power than to keep it hot, and it's still plenty hot for the tub and the shower and the sink.
And are the dishes then sterilized like they're supposed to be, or what have you? Obviously, there was some reason for the 140, like the health department demands that the Hobart is at a certain temperature. Yeah. What?
Well, we're assuming that when we wash them by hand with water that's as hot as we can stand, that they're okay.
Or if you do have a dishwasher, just to turn it off when it hits the heating cycle is a good way to save energy.
Right.
And they dry in there fairly quickly. But
yeah, you just open the door of the dishwasher at that point and let them dry with open air.
There's a new dishwasher that has a 12-hour timer on it, and it turns on at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning or whenever you want it to. When in some parts of the United States, I guess electricity after midnight is cheaper. From midnight to 6, if you use it then, it's less expensive than during the day. Hmm. And so and they've got the same mechanisms, of course, for like the timers on hot water heaters, that the heating is done in the evening and the other thing.
Can you see that?
So the whole house could turn on in the middle of the night. A washing machine.
Wake up.
Tennis shoes and electric dryers. Bang, bang.
Karen has taught me to wash clothes in cold water. She uses
coal power
and doesn't use hot water at all anymore, and that's a big savings. And our dryer up here has never worked. I mean, it dries with cold fluff. There's no heat in it.
I can continue to use it. It's
an old dryer, but it's so it takes an hour to dry the clothes instead of 15 minutes, but it's, they don't bake, and I don't have that many that I have to throw in. I guess if you had little kids and had constant loads of things to get dry, that would be a problem.
You questioned the timer on your hot water heater, didn't you, when I mentioned that, or turning it off and on?
Well, I just was curious, that's a good question for Jim. How long does it take to build up a hot water in the hot water tank?
I'm really not sure. It depends on the hot water tank.
Say it's a 40-gallon or 20-gallon or something, you have a feel for it.
I really don't know.
What I was wondering is, if maybe 2 times a week you fired it up, would that be more efficient than leaving it heat all week to use your hot water, of course, you're going to need your dishes, too.
It seems like that wouldn't be adequate enough.
Yeah.
One possible advantage I could see of it would, power companies are starting to install load shedding devices in homes now. When the load in the house reaches a certain level, they figured it out. I guess it's primarily for heating, though. It'll shut off your heat for about 15 seconds at different intervals through the peak times, and it's long enough to cut the power somewhat, but yet it's not too long to where it things cool off too much, where you have to use quite a bit to get it back up. And it's just for cutting down the load at the peak hours.
So it takes what they've done for industrial customers for a long time. They have an interruptible supply, and they've done this domestically now with a small device.
Mm-hmm. You mean it's shutting off 15 seconds at a time regularly for an hour or 2 hours?
I guess so. I'm not real sure how it works, but that's my understanding. If you do that in enough homes in an area, you can cut the load at a peak time.
What, 15 seconds? Or it doesn't seem like much.
It doesn't seem like much, but when you consider you're spreading out, I think, the peak over a longer area.
And in 4 homes, you've cut it off completely. In 4 homes, you have a period of no use. Mm-hmm. In one corner.
Because power companies have the capacity to run, at night or during the off-peak hours when they start generating expensively is during the peak hours, especially in the summer months where they're conditioning loads and have a lot of electric heating in the winter, because they have to usually supplement with oil generators, at least in Minnesota, that's how it is.
I thought you had some studies, because on retreats we've led, there are people who have given dollar amounts of savings from their, the people who knew...
solar hot water heating?
No, from scheduling their hot water heater rather than just leaving it on all the time. They saw X number of dollars on their bill go off when they did that.
I haven't seen that study.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's people who come to the retreats we've led. The quick recovery hot water, all I know is when we get to Leavenworth, we always shut it off when we leave. When we get to Leavenworth, we have hot water within 20 or 25 minutes from any spigot, enough to do dishes. Or
less than that. I'll bet it's 15 minutes and we've got hot water.
The only thing that came as a negative was a couple wore out their circuit breaker.
Oh, I see.
And then went to some kind of a switch or a timer, because they were always going to the switch box and throwing the circuit breaker, and after so many times the circuit breaker's thing was...
We have a natural gas heating for our gas and for our forced air furnace and for our hot water tank. And that thing is very wasteful. They're coming out now with turn-offs, automatic turn-offs and relights, so that the pilot light is not running all the time, which is a real savings too, because something like 25% of your fuel is the pilot light. And this summer, of course, we went down, just turned it off and didn't have a furnace on for about 8 months. And boy, what a difference.
Imagine that timer's included, depending on your insulation, if you're running water tank in your pipe.
When Chalet 7, for instance, with Tim Martin, Martin's in it. When they had water only when the electricity was only at night to heat it, did they have hot water all the next day?
I'm not sure. So you do that in Lab 6, and the primary use of hot water tends to be in the mornings anyway, so they seem to get enough when we do that. Although they were supplementing hot water with wood too, so.
She does, Barbara Jurgensen, does take the step that you might change your lifestyle, not just find a way in which you always had hot water, but ran it differently, and that's to plan 2 days a week we're going to have hot water, and the other five we're not. Now then you begin to change your way of life.
Anybody have any ideas how that would work with regard to dishes?
You'd have to heat it. If you have a wood-burning stove, you heat it on the stove.
Or a small quantity for dishes or something like that.
Well, it's amazing. Like, twice now in West Virginia, our electricity has been off for 4.5 days. And we have a pump that brings the water from the spring to our house. Stupidly done, but anyway. The amount of water you use when you have to carry it from someplace and heat it, you get by on an amazing amount, and everybody washes their hair in the sink, and you brush your teeth with one glass of water, and you put water to bathe in a metal tub or something like that. But dishes you can wash in such a little amount, and still, by pouring boiling water over them, feel that they're clean.
This last time, after 4.5 days, we still had a little water in the 50-gallon hot water tank.
Is there anything else that you can think of that would be sort of something you do daily that you, besides brush your teeth and wash your face and
my
wash your dishes?
My big kick is the length of time my kids take showers. It's glorious to take a 10-minute shower, but I think that is really up.
It's one of my major sins.
Well, men seem to like to take longer showers than women for some reason.
You bet. We went back east and visited Marilyn's folks, and they have a water saver on their shower. And of course, Marilyn and I, you know, she had forgotten, I guess, what it was for, but I never knew what it was for. Her dad knocked on her, said, "What are you guys doing? Why don't you use that water saver?" You know, because what it does is you turn on the water, and there's a deal on the shower head, and you get wet, and then you can lather up, and you turn it off, and then you're all lathered up, and then you turn it on and rinse off, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like probably 30 seconds of water instead of...
Yeah.
So you can buy those for shower heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're called water
saver. Down off from the water, instead of going down here and adjusting the temperature, it's just one lever up on top.
So that it's the right temperature when you turn it back on.
Yeah. You do that, little ice crystals form on you.
On your butt.
It's a different lifestyle.
They also make shower heads that simply use a fraction of the amount of water, so that the volume is reduced immensely, even though it still feels like a full shower.
Uh-huh. Last 2 years ago, our last year in California, there was a big drought, and Marin County, north of San Francisco, was nearly dry. All the reservoirs were. Remember that? It was just incredible. They were using paper plates in restaurants, and it was amazing.
What was the percentage that they cut to? It was less than
4 gallons.
Well, but the whole Marin County used like 25% of the water they had used the year before over a long period of time.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All voluntarily.
Right, and so it was all voluntary. And
we watered our plants with dirty bath water.
Yeah.
Or put it down the toilet to flush the toilet.
Yeah.
We flush the toilet that way. We did that with a shower. We learned to do that, and now it's just habit now to take short showers.
The little water saver thing, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company was giving them away, and they were a penny a piece. That's how sophisticated. It was just a washer with a small hole in it.
No screen on it, isn't there? Just a small.
There wasn't no screen or anything. Just to reduce this volume that could come out. There's some elaborate ones that cost some money, but there's also the penny ones. One copper penny.
And energy saving things too. Microwave ovens, as much as I don't like what they stand for necessarily, they're really more efficient than the amount of energy you use in your big oven. And I've discovered that you can bake potatoes on the top of a stove in a very small burner instead of having the whole oven on in the same amount of time in a heavy pan with a lid on it on a low heat. They'll bake very, very well. And like when I make a potato salad or something, if I'm boiling potatoes, I put the eggs right in the water where I'm boiling the potatoes. And when I bake bread or bake anything, it's always done close to the meal time so that everything is baked at the same time instead of having your oven on at different times of the day.
What about the wrapping of the hot water heater? Dan asked that before you came. I wanted to come back to it. How efficient is it? What does it cost? What's the best kind of?
They sell these little blankets for about $17-$18 now. You know, as soon as demand goes up, of course, the price will go up. But they seem to be highly touted. I don't know what efficiency they give. You know, all it is like putting a coat on your water heater, and I think it'd be wise to make sure that, you know, like especially if you've got a gas type or something, if you've got some non-flammable sort of blanket, you know, whatever.
Are some hot water heaters insulated and then you wouldn't?
Well, they're all insulated anyway inside already.
Oh, but this helps.
Yeah, it adds insulation.
Could I just go back to my cooking for one thing? That pressure cookers are really a savings. If you don't have a pressure cooker, a small Presto cooker, a 4-quart, you really ought to have one of those because potatoes take 2 minutes, vegetables a minute, meat that usually takes 3 hours, it takes about 20 minutes. And they're very safe to use if you use them properly. I don't have any problems. And our kids gave us a crock pot a couple of years ago. And again, especially for women that work, you know, come home and cook, to have something in that crock pot all day long takes practically no energy whatsoever. Very, very slow cooking. And 8 hours while you're gone and you come back and dinner's practically ready and you haven't used any energy at all. So there are a lot of, and using a wok for vegetables and things like that is to do everything at once on one burner is a good.
One of the things about a wok too is that you're not juicing all the nutrients out of it, staying in the vegetable.
I'm going to give an advertising plug for this publication, Consumer Reports. This is a cooperative nonprofit deal with no advertising, and they take on all sorts of things like Pintos and Corvairs and stuff like that. But anyway, got one issue. They have special publications that they put out. And this is their newest one. It's called Money Saving Guide to Energy in the Home. What size room air conditioner do you need? Insulation, how much? Should you add storm windows? Et cetera, et cetera. And that's $3 paperbound. This is a very, they've got a large engineering crew that works with this company. And we've been getting it for a long time and really enjoy reading it. I don't know why. We get it as a gift from Martha, bless her heart. We don't ever buy anything here. We sort of like to, I like to read it, especially in the bathroom. But anyway, this is, here's a, some examples of some things that were just invented in the last year. This is how to do a home energy audit. It gives a checklist of 25 things and how to do it and how to check them out, and then making computations at the end about.
What issue is that?
Oh, this is the October 79 issue. This is an article on electric fans and where to install them, how to compute the, they assume you're going to do most everything yourself. And so they, the, you measure the attic, you measure the rooms, the cubic feet per minute or whatever the fan, however you rate fans, and where to install it, and then, so you do all your homework yourself through, with their help. And then if you need Jim to wire it, you know, at least, you know, that you've done the research behind it. So that, this is a good, that was an interesting article. And then there's another one here on, oh, at the end of the year, then they put out these buying guides. And the one that I showed David, there it is. Yeah, there's the whole chapter in there on energy. This is another, there's an article here on fans, and then this article is on storm windows, the same thing. They give you charts for measuring the volume of the room, how many windows you have, what's the normal winter temperature, and you, you fill in all the blanks with their chart, and then you come up with the answer of whether you should or whether you shouldn't. And triple paint windows, by the way, they say, are just, are not at all worth the money. Like you said, it's on the flat part of the curve. Really, yeah, double pane would make a lot of sense, but triple pane are not, are a waste. It doesn't do anything.
A double pane.
A double pane, yeah.
I like what you said, probably be more important than more insulation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those things is where can you most get the leverage out of the effort that you're putting in for it. And that caulking gun's got a lot of leverage. Where, how does one tell just where the caulking ought to happen? Do you do it from on the outside of the house around the window frames or?
Especially around windows and doors, around the frames and so forth, where all the siding comes in and it's been cut and it's shrunk because time has dried out the wood, and now the wood is shorter than it was when the carpenter placed it tight to the trim. And then, of course, the actual storm window on the window, and then the weather stripping around the door to sort of prevent that. But sort of outside, anywhere there's a hole cut, there seems to develop leaks, especially also at corners. Now, sometimes you'll find right at a corner, you can put a lot of goop before it sort of stops. And of course, that's not the idea, to fill up the whole wall with goop, but it seems like the corners of everything that's built is always sort of a weak problem.
Well, if you find a fairly wide gap, say at a corner, mm-hmm. is it best to stuff it with insulation first?
Or some sort of cover rag or what they have, backer bar, that you can, I don't know if you can buy it, it's some sort of backer bar. It's commercially, what they, for caulking buildings, they have, it comes in rope, and it's sort of like a plastic material, and it's air cells in this plastic material, and you stuff it in the big crack, and then you caulk over the top of it.
Like a rope of licorice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I suppose this stuff might be available also through your hardware store somehow.
Maybe you notice there's a hole in the kitchen. It's almost like a fan blowing air from the outside.
Mm-hmm. So, in the kitchen at home?
Uh-huh. One of our leaks. There's another thing, too, about getting the house so tight that it doesn't breathe, and that is you're not getting any fresh air into it. You know, there's sort of a, it's like I was reading Schumacher last night, talking about convergent versus divergent problems, where some problems are easy because everybody sort of arrives at the same answer, but some things, there's you know, both ranges on what you do, and we're making these houses so tight that now they don't breathe properly, and you get condensation on the windows. Any moisture automatically goes to any cold surface, you get condensation. And that can be a real problem. You know, you get dripping down the windows eventually, and all your wood sills are starting to rot out and so forth. So,
is that the only reason it does that?
Pardon?
Is that the only reason?
Well, if you've got moisture in the air from cooking or shower or whatever, and you've got a cold surface, it'll condense on that surface.
But that doesn't necessarily mean the house is too tight.
No, not necessarily, but if it's a pretty good indication, you know. Now, I had that problem in the house that I had before energy was so important, I guess. It was always important, but didn't realize it. And he said, well, go up and cut a hole in your return air duct. I had sort of my return air was, I had a cold attic. My insulation was on the attic, but my return air duct was up in my attic. And so I just went up there with a tin snip and cut a hole in it. And then I was drawing some fresh air makeup into the system, and that sort of helped. But it wasn't, that didn't make it more efficient. You know, I was heating colder air. So there's, and I don't know how to deal with that. You know, there's some sort of wisdom that needs to evolve on that one.
Mark Erlander, Dan's brother when he was here, one of the things I wanted to sketch and the other I just wanted to describe. He was talking about lots of different kinds of wood stoves, and he has a new Scandinavian one that he's very happy with. The chimney, the flue, goes out here, and I think it's either 4 or 6 inches, I know it isn't 8, and the door and the draft controls are here. And what you do is build up the fire, build up the wood here, light it in this corner, and it continues to burn back this way with the smoke coming around this way. He says that if you have a wood burning fireplace with the draft here and the flue here, you simply draw right across all of your wood and it's not efficient. Then what you do in the morning, you have a little rake and you bring what's left. You rebuild the fire by bringing what's left back here, building over it, and then it will continue to burn this way. It burns all night very efficiently. The primary reason he bought it was the place where he lives in Oregon doesn't have a lot of wood, but it has a lot of sticks. And this burns best on virtually sticks. I mean,
So it doesn't get carried away. It sort of burns slow.
Right. Burns very, very slowly, efficiently, with the kind of thing that other people throw away or consider slash pile or what have you, the toppings, whereas the cordwood is hard to buy and very expensive where he lives. So even on a thing like, instead of just a wood stove, he had shopped a long time. And I don't know about the baffle board and all those kinds of things, but there certainly is a lot of difference in efficiency.
Do you remember the name of the stove?
J-O-T-U-L?
Jotl,
I think. It's
J-O-T-L.
J-O-T-U-L.
Norwegian.
J-U-L.
Okay.
It's either that one or a similar name. Yeah. And we have his address if you don't find
it.
Second thing, he has a friend who maximized a constant chimney fire. He built the house himself. He built the chimney, and he surrounded the chimney with his storage of water. He starts a fire. All you really need is some smoke. And once the chimney is full of smoke, he has a propane lighter that starts this combustion. And what he does, control a constant chimney fire. All that you really need to continue to feed it is the smoke. And that heats the water, which circulates both for the hot water and for circulating hot water heat. So his hot water and his heat is simply a controlled chimney fire, which takes virtually no fuel except enough smoldering that there's smoke. He's been in the house, and Mark's enough of a mechanical person that he sketched it and drew it. I still, all I'm telling you is that's all I know. But you.
That sounds really good.
Sounds spooky.
So that you could even say you had that stove and the chimney went up, you could add this as another element in the system. You could have your basic heater, and then you could have this use of this the smoke, which has all this energy within the gases that's right now just going out and polluting the air, and you would clean it up really by burning it.
Correct.
More.
Correct. His friend went the route of aesthetics because he likes an open fire, and all he really needed was the smoke. and he knew that what he was doing. It would have been more efficient this way. The storage of water does two things. It is your heat and your hot water. Secondly, that's the way in which the danger of the chimney fire is eliminated. I mean, Mark started by saying, put a styrofoam cup full of water down in a fire and it will not burn. Right? The styrofoam will not burn. Is that correct?
It just melts.
No?
Even a paper cup.
Or a paper cup.
You can boil eggs in it.
Right. The paper will not burn.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well,
hey,
I don't know.
Theoretically.
Theoretically.
The rest of us know intuitively it'll burn, right?
But anyway, I think there's a possibility. Obviously, there's great possibility because the Mark's been in the home and it's working. But I've never
heard
anything.
What does he wrap it with? How's the water around the pipe?
I think it's a tank.
With the pipe in the middle?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll bring Mark back to lecture.
John, what time is it today?
10:40.
How long does it take to ski down there?
2 hours.
And what time does the boat get there?
Coming back down 1:15.
1:00.
1:00.
Takes at least 2 hours to get down.
I don't think I changed that.
All right.
Thanks. Sorry about the interruption. One other thing while we're on stoves is that makeup air. The air that comes into the stove for the combustion in the first place should be drawn from the outside. In other words, if you ran a tube through your wall or somewhere, it doesn't make sense to take heated air from your house and throw it in your fireplace and suck warm air out of the house. You should run a small duct from an outside wall to this stove or to a little register right in front of it so that that is where the air comes from as it draws into the intake. And this is sort of something that's being pushed to this outside makeup air.
And I was going to keep in mind with these stoves, I'm not sure, but I don't think there are many homes that have existing chimneys or these type of stoves. You'd have to check with your local building codes and see what would be demanded of you.
Most of them will come with a metal chimney that you can install and a collar like this at the roof so that you get the separation of the wood construction from them, and it's a real important thing to not just slap a piece of pipe through the wall without proper separation because it gets quite hot. As a matter of fact, when you're putting stoves down, the back side and the bottom side need to be well insulated with fire brick or asbestos board or something like that. My brother bought a wood stove and he was cooking away and happy as a lark, and they came home one night and the carpet was smoldering. Well, it was up on legs. They had a sheet of tin under it, but after they put the water to it, they took it out and the whole floor had burnt charcoal. You know, it was one of these slow burning fires like you described.
Under the tin,
on the floor, down, not up, you know. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So like most codes, as you're, I think, pointing out, require a good separation between combustible structure and these hot surfaces.
Is a conventional fireplace chimney insufficient? In other words, we put these stoves right in the fireplaces of several chalets. Did you have to modify the chimneys?
Well, I've heard that. I've also heard some of them aren't suitable. I don't have any facts for that.
They put this pipe up through the chimney.
The reasoning was a lot of fireplaces were just for decorative purposes and weren't meant to be run 24 hours a day.
One of the things Mary's brother did, and we did it on our fireplace, was to take 2x4s and make a frame and then just lay your bricks right down in this whole frame and then set your stove on it. So you just, instead of modifying the floor, just take away the carpet if you had one, or if you have a wooden floor, just make yourself a brick square and set the, and mm-hmm. Then you've got the separation that you need, and it's not unattractive at all.
That's good. And local building codes, I think, might be able to help that out.
One thing too, don't be afraid to talk to your city, your local city, with regard to building codes. The building departments are usually pretty helpful. If
you go in and say you want to do something, they sometimes they even have a handout on these things that give you critical dimensions to be aware of. And the reason that the code exists, besides being a hassle, is to protect the health and safety of people. And they've run into these problems a lot, so they're a pretty good source of information.
What about Swedish composting toilets? Does Washington State allow them?
I don't know. We haven't...
You've never tried to put one in the house?
Swedish compostable toilet.
I've seen my Minneapolis and they work quite well.
What is this?
Well, it's just a way to use your toilet stuff.
You don't flush your toilet. You just
no water.
Let it drop down and then a big bin fills up, and there was a family that had lived there for I think 3 years and they had not even emptied the bin yet. And there's no smell.
It's vented to the outside.
Yeah.
And then you just take it.
It draws it right down.
Yeah, this sounds like an inside outhouse.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And then they use that the bin and plant it in their backyard for fertilizer later on.
Like West Virginia, you can do that because there are very few building codes, but right across the line in Virginia, a friend of ours who tried to do it couldn't.
That's what I sort of double phrased my statement, because some building departments are populated by people who love to obstruct, and others are populated by people who like to help. And it's really hard, you know, you sort of have to go in and sort of chat with them a while before you want to really bury your soul with a real question that you have.
We did not plan ahead in regard to chalets 13 and 14 like we could have. When John Rieke ordered his Fisher stove, he ordered it, where is it, Post Falls, Idaho, isn't that one of the places that they make them? Or anyway, they make them near here. He went and ordered the galvanized pipe put into the stove, so when it was delivered it's all ready to run water through it. And we're going to have a problem when we close down the hospital, because that's the hot water for 12 and 14, right? But both 13 and 14 have recently been put on wood, but we didn't go ahead. When Raleigh did that, we should have the piping in there so that your hot water is being heated at the same time that your Fisher stove is cooking.
That can be.
It can be added.
Put a lot of holes in the fire department so we can just...
Well, it was in there once, because when we lived there, we had the water going through the furnace.
It's a different furnace now.
But it looked
green. Raleigh has covered it all, so we'll just uncover it. But anyway, if you're going to buy a wood stove, that's a possibility, is then not to have a solar panel heat it, but that you're already having the possibility of heating it by burning with wood.
It's just a difficult thing in Somerville, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Farmhouses around our farm that have the hot water tank right next to the wood-burning stove in the kitchen, they've got to keep those wood-burning stoves going all summer long, and they do a lot of canning and things, so it's not that big of a problem, but their kitchens are so hot. And,
I'm interested in returning again to the problem of tightening up a house. We have a friend in Northfield who works for one of the regional U.S. solar energy centers, and he designed and built his house. And in Northfield, Minnesota last year, his heating cost for the whole year was $50 for half a cord of wood, heated the whole place. Mm-hmm. And he does have solar panels on the house, but the main reason it's so efficient is that really about all he needs to heat the house is to have a couple people in there or a couple candles burning, because there's none of this differential, none of the leakage.
Mm-hmm. It isn't underground?
No, it's just out there. It isn't protected by anything. It's a bare lot, no trees, no hills.
That's
just a square box.
Why I was sort of trying to encourage normal buildings, caulked and insulated, you know, oriented with the south exposure, which you probably did.
Yeah, that's right.
Can be a tremendous help. You know, maybe you don't get all the way, but you sure make a dent in it.
Well, he spent $5,000 for solar panels on the big south face of his house. But he's since calculated that if he had spent that money for thicker insulation in the walls, he'd have been better off. I think he did use either 2x6s or 2x8 studs, so he's got 6 or 8 inches of wall insulation. And he said, if I had made them 2x12s, use my money that way, I wouldn't need the solar panels.
That must be on the flat line.
He could have built three houses for that, and 2x12. It makes 3 2x4s, you know.
Yeah.
But it is an efficient house.
Yeah, it's an efficient house. And you know, a lot of us will be spending over $1,000 for oil for a winter, and he's spending $50 for half a cord of wood. And mainly not because of the solar panels, but because of the tightness of his house. But many of us have old houses that we have to try to shape up, and I'm less worried about getting it so tight that no air is moving out.
Yeah, you don't think you're going to get
You'll
that.
Face that problem.
I don't know how many of you have these big old rumble doors that close off a big dam. You know, it's like a door that's about 6 feet wide.
Oh, yeah.
But my grandmother had one. When we moved into our house, we had one. We thought, boy, that's really neat. Well, that's the biggest heat loser in our whole house because the wind blows against the siding where that door happens to be, which it pockets into a wall that's slightly on the outside. And the wind just whistles through there. So we've got that crack stuffed with paper, you know, and boy, does that really help to close that off, you know. It took a while to figure out what was going on. Where was all this cold air coming from? Does your friend have a vestibule in his house? You know, like one door and then the next door?
Yeah.
I think that's a wise step. It also gives you a place for sort of like a... What did they used to call that, you know, where you put the plants and... Right. That's what it is. Before you get to the nave of the house.
That's right. How about drapes? Doug Bolin said that there were now decorative drapes that were comparable to 3.5 inches of insulation. Is that...
I'm sure there are. They're really coming up with some fantastic.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, kind of really that attach with Velcro.
With what?
With Velcro on the sides, kind of rolls it off.
Yeah.
Huh.
So every time you open it, goes.
Right.
Can't think of your name.
I don't know what the name.
Are there any? You don't know of any particular companies or stores that are handling the best drapes or what?
No, but these magazines that Jim pointed out, you know, like Consumer Reports, they usually list some of the sources of these things.
I think that'd be a big start, Dave, that your windows somehow to be able to cut that off at night by pulling drapes or on a cold day, I'm sure is an important part.
I like that idea as opposed to the one where they have two sheets of glass within which at night they pour foam.
Yeah.
That's another technique, and that seems to me to be a big hassle. You know, I like things that are simple. And I think,
Corey, foam?
Yeah, it's like a little vacuum system, you know, more gadgetry, more convenience, you know, that kind of thing. And that's the kind of thing that you press a button and it's all sucked out of there. And then you can see out.
Are you making that up?
No, it's true. There's house duty thing. Right, duty.
Right.
They also take sheets of... You know, what's this white?
Styrofoam.
Yeah, and just, you know,
set it in
and then take it out in the morning.
The thing about that, though, is what do you do with the styrofoam all day? You know, some people have put fabric coverings, you know, like Miramico fabrics, and they'll take it up and they'll hang it up as a picture during the day and then stick it in the window.
Yeah.
But I sort of like the idea of maybe a drape that's less bulky and maybe it's easier to store.
So you could take that styrofoam to its insulation, cover it with fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Make it the size of your window.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
what these new drapes are. They have insulated somehow.
Yeah, you could sew something like that.
They pull up and they're attached at the top by Velcro.
And you can get interior shutters that are designed to fit over the window, the kind that will, you know, fold in the middle. Yeah. That's the problem, but they have a tight seal in the way that even the drape doesn't have.
Yeah. Now another thing you might consider as you just started thinking out loud is you get the flow of the air outside, and that's a convective coolant or a convective heat loss. You know, it's all that wind moving across your windows. If you put something on the outside even, in addition to, then you're going to prevent that, you know, so I don't know what you might do, but the outside shutter. That really fits, you know what I mean? Not that
way. Close up your house. You're not going to matter.
You know, there is a house that's been done, that they build a house that was normal structure, and then they built another wall outside of it, about 8 inches outside of it, another wall 8 inches outside, and they built a complete envelope around that house. And it's like this house lives in a benign environment. And that windows, of course, they lined the windows up and they boxed around them.
I was about to say.
No, it works tremendously. And the thing is that the guy has collectors on one side, and that heat rises and just circulates around the house. It works beautifully.
A friend of mine in South Dakota, he lived in a trailer on a farm. So what he did, he went out and bought a bunch of bales of hay and he just covered the whole trailer with hay bales.
Farmers, of course, have been doing that for decades. The tar paper and the hay bales around the lower half of their house is a common sight in Minnesota in the winter.
Okay. Well, when I was pretty small, we lived on a ranch in eastern Oregon. When we first moved down there, we lived in a sod house that was built in the side of a hill. This was built by the Basque sheep herders. And we weren't in there but a couple of weeks while the previous owner was moving out of the main house. But it was, I was just told about this because I was too small to remember, but I think that, you know, there's where indigenous building, you know, father to son handed down the principles and so forth. And I'm sure that house is still habitable.
One of the sheds on our farm has about 8-inch thick walls filled with sawdust. And the only problem is the sawdust keeps leaking out of the bottom, but it's very, I mean, it's not too cold in the winter and not too hot in the summer. It's where I keep all my canned goods and things.
Double door with linoleum in between, and then double walls, and you put the sawdust up into the attic and just get in there and push it, and it goes down through, and it was the old ice house.
There was an old sawmill in there.
Yeah.
Jim Hanson.
Well, this is a little off the subject, but he's of course the tenant. Would the automobile fit into this discussion at all? That's one thing I've always wondered about. Terry and I are going to deal with that when we move to Olympia. That chances are, if things go like they probably will, we'll find an apartment, and then I'll go to school on one side of town, she'll work on the other side of town. And I'm not sure how public transportation is there, but I don't like Dan and Karen. In Albuquerque, can you use public transportation? Or how do you deal with that? We're going to have to buy a car, I guess, and I'd like to get away from that as much as possible. But I don't think buying a smaller car is always given as the answer, but
most Western cities, the public transportation is, they're so car-oriented, and the cities are built. I know people that try to take buses, and it means, you know, an hour and a half to get someplace in a car. You could take 10 minutes,
It's a rainy climate, too. Otherwise, I mean, Mary and I talked last night. I gave away a Vespa motor scooter that got 120 miles to the gallon with that thing. And the Tyrolean shop guy in Leavenworth just bought one, paid $1,700 for a Vespa. Mine was a $500 scooter about 4 years ago. So, but in a really rainy climate, I'm not sure that would be the answer. Or bicycle.
Yeah, Terry wants to get a bicycle.
Yeah.
My hesitation is safety, though.
Yes, right. On a highway.
On busy city boulevards.
Yeah, I've got a motorcycle, and I really like to get it.
A couple of pairs of jogging shoes are cheaper.
But does Portland has a fairly good bus?
It's going to be in Olympia.
Olympia.
Olympia probably doesn't.
They do have a small public transportation system. I just see that as we use so much energy in our automobiles.
Yeah.
There was a way we read about from Minnesota how to somehow get rid of, lower the gas mileage again or whatever, and they insulate the gas pipes in the gas tank, and that was a new idea, and I guess that really saves gas too in the cold weather in the winter time. I think that was in Mechanics Illustrated or something.
In the car?
Yeah, in the car. They insulate the gas lines and to the carburetor, and then it's at a warmer temperature so it doesn't have to heat up as fast or as much before it burns.
And you also have trouble with freezing gas lines
at
some time. I mean, you have to put an additive in sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
You told about your friends in the roast beef. Wasn't it you that told me that?
Roast beef.
They
travel?
This
they
cook on your manifold?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, the people who cook the roast beef
while
by strapping it to their manifold while they drove across the country.
How do they just cut it off and turn it and then they drive on?
The other night, the discussion, especially Walt Pierce, he felt, in answer to Jim Fish, he felt that you would never get your investment back by buying a new rabbit, that we were coming to the end of that automobile era soon enough that you were better off with an old car. I've never, I don't know if he's right or not.
I don't think he is.
I don't either.
It's being a little over from the other time, but I think it will eventually be the case.
We're going to buy Peter's Volkswagen.
That, a used, good mileage car, that's what I would do if I were you in Olympia, I think.
Yeah, it just, when I was single, it was easy. I just moved to where, you know, I was working at, to walk with two people in the family now.
I just wish they came back with that 36 horsepower VW the windshield washer was a mustard jar that you squeezed under the, there wasn't anything that you couldn't fix on those, but they're 40 miles to the gallon or something in 1958. No, 50. They went to a bigger one in 58. It was 57 and earlier was a good VW.
This is kind of a change of subject again, but what about for tenants? I guess I'm concerned as a person who doesn't really envision ever owning a house or having that much money. Are there laws for landlords to insulate their buildings? I've heard rumors in Minnesota that there were certain stipulations, you know, to have your homes insulated so that tenants weren't ripped off in that way.
Seattle is right now considering, and they're probably going to enact an energy ordinance. They decided in an energy study that they were going to go conservation as opposed to building more plants. And what it means is that within 5 years, every home in Seattle will have to meet certain energy audit requirements. And it also will affect commercial apartments and buildings and things like that. New construction will be affected right off, not right off, but when the law takes place. But, you know, retrofit, where you might want to not be penalized for somebody who has a very inefficient building or something like that. I don't know how long it would take to enact. And the other thing is that the ordinance that they're talking about is fairly weak. Our house already meets it.
Because where I was living in Minneapolis during the summer, we got a new landlord and he decided to make us pay for the gas heating and whatnot, and agreed to lower our rent, and was kind of giving us the impression that we weren't getting a raise in rent. And we said, well, that's a bunch of bull, because now we have to turn, of course we're going to turn down the thermostats, but the house isn't all insulated, and now that's our problem because we're paying for that.
There is a tenant's bill of rights, which I don't know whether it's national or what. In Seattle, there's a tenant's bill of rights, and you do have certain rights to adequate heating and so forth. And I think that kind of thing could be sort of subversive to the intent, but I don't know if it's consistent in other cities. You know? You really have to be, the guy really has to be Simon Legree before they'll do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know.
The cover story in the Time magazine, The Cooling of America, was that a cover?
Yeah.
Recent version?
Yeah.
That story indicated that in New York City, that the owners are simply abandoning buildings. They cannot afford to upgrade them. They cannot afford to heat them, and they can't charge the rent, so they just
Joe Barton's parish.
Give it away.
Joe Barton, Larry Gotz's parish of South Bronx. There's 300 buildings like that a month in their parish area.
That are just abandoned. Well, and you can have them if you want them.
Well, they burn them.
Sweat equity. Well, but sweat equity, if you can take over a building and fix it up, if you can do it.
They quoted the man that runs the city housing agency, the buildings that are owned by the city of New York. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what he said, but the gist of it was that the whole thing is just chaos. That the city housing is horrendous. And the price of fuel is doing this. The people.
I wonder if there'd be an opportunity there for people who rent apartments and decide that they might want to live in a slightly communal or completely communal lifestyle. And if they could, through their pooling of their resources, afford to at least get these buildings in some sort of shape that they would sort of do the sort of energy things we're talking about. And then sort of through a longer period of time, have a master plan of what you want to do and do improvements as time goes along. Yeah.
Well, co-op housing is just getting to be quite a big thing in Minneapolis. I know with the shutting down of a lot of schools, they're trying to turn those into some sort of communal living situation. Seems like a real good idea, but most of the time you don't have the money to buy the property in the first place.
But some of these narrow row buildings
houses.
In New York City, well, not houses exactly, they're more stories and not too wide. That's what our friend did. He and some other people went in and they pooled their resources, and through the sweat equity, were able to take over ownership of the building and do the things that they needed to do to upgrade it. But it takes a group of people, because none of them have money.
Baltimore, the urban homesteading, where you bought a house for a dollar, what it really is fairly wealthy people who have now made a kind of Georgetown. It did not help the poor. The poor did not have the wherewithal and even the filling out of the forms and all that. So most of those houses went to a kind of urban sophisticated group that now has townhouses at a buck a piece. They had to fix them up.
Well, yeah, another thing is the whole historical preservation movement, I think, has been a real negative effect on energy, because now for upper middle class living in the city in an old house is in, and these people come in and buy the homes fairly cheaply, and then they restore them, and the poor people are forced out. Now even into the suburbs where
the car is going to clobber them now.
And there's no
transportation
services out there.
The rich get rich and the poor get poor.
Yeah, it's just kind of a reverse movement back into the city.
It's after any one more item. Somebody that didn't get to share something,
sure.
They've tried. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask about the plastic on the windows. What mill plastic is best for this sort of a thing?
What did you use around here?
Tom Halverson supervised most of it, and there's different kinds, apparently.
Yeah, I've seen some that you can't see through, and to me that would be like living in a prison.
Right.
And I would try to find some. I would go for clarity. The thing is to keep that wind from whipping against the pane of glass, and something that will hold up, and like...
It really has made a difference. Tom worked more than any other year, especially the dining hall, closing off those two doors.
Yeah.
And having the interior door really come against that, it's much more efficient.
For our old farmhouse, we built the simple wooden frames and stapled plastic around them, and they fit very, very snugly. And you put them in and hold them in with two nails, or four nails that are bent over, take them down every year. And
we have them numbered so that
each window
that they're built, so we don't have to rip them off.
A lot cheaper than storm windows, and it didn't take all that long.
Yeah.
Well, that's for sure. My mother just put storm windows on her mobile home. I mean, how many windows can you have in a mobile home? Over $2,000.
Oh, that's the...
$2,000?
$2,000.
Well, it's called socket
two of them.